Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
What's a secret you'll take to your grave but confess on internet to get it off your chest? Story one. One time in high school, I stole this giant turtle statue from a random yard and put it in my grandma's as a joke. It was around the time when the traveling gnome trend was popular. Well, it turned out that the old lady I took it from was my grandma's frenemy. And when she came over and saw her stolen turtle, she demanded answers. My grandma's response, "It just showed up," didn't satisfy her, and they got into a huge fight over it. The other old lady passed away a few years ago. I feel bad that I never told her my grandma didn't steal the turtle. I did. Story two. Everyone thinks I'm just a messed up drug addict. What they don't know is that between the ages of 11 and 14, my drunk, evil stepmom would take me to her favorite bar and pimp me out because it amused her. It destroyed my mind, so I started using drugs, not to get high, but to try to forget. I was 50 years old before I told anybody. By then, my family had given up on me, my wife had left me, and my son hadn't spoken to me in over 10 years. That secret was going to die with me. But for some reason, I told one friend what had happened to me. She helped me realize it wasn't my fault, and that I wasn't just a lost cause. Today, 12 years later, she is still the best friend I've ever had, and I haven't touched coca since 2008, even though it cost me everything important to me. Story 3. I'm probably too late for this to be seen, but I'll type it out as therapy for myself. The last time I spoke with my mother, I didn't really speak at all. I was 13 years old and had spent years at the hospital with her while she went through chemotherapy, radiation, laser surgery, whatever they could try to fight her spreading lymphoma. I was just a stupid kid, frustrated with having to be at the hospital every day after school. We were in her room, and I was annoyed that I couldn't just be at home in my room, calling my friends, no cell phones yet, or worrying about whatever trivial thing mattered to me back then. When we were leaving that day, I was a giant asshole. I wouldn't give her a hug and just muttered something like, "I just want to go home." The next day, she fell into a coma and never woke up. The last time I got to hug her, her body was cold. That will haunt me until the day I die. Story 4. My first day as a nanny looking after a baby girl. I took her to the park, recording videos of her and encouraging her to walk to me. She took 3 steps, then fell on her butt and started crying. That's when it hit me. I didn't actually know if she had walked with her parents yet. She still seemed so unsure on her feet. Later, I spoke with her mom, who told me she was super close but hadn't walked yet. That's when I realized she must have taken her first steps with me, probably because she was feeling clingy without her mom. I never told her parents that she walked with me first. About 3 weeks later, she finally took her official first steps for them. Story 5. In 7th grade, I got invited to a popular girl's birthday party. While I was there, I took a massive shit in her bathroom and clogged the toilet. Panicking, I just walked out like nothing happened. A little while later, one of the other kids went to use the bathroom. They came out screaming that someone had left a giant log in the toilet and it wouldn't flush. Suddenly, the entire birthday party shifted to the bathroom so everyone could inspect the disaster I had left behind. I played along and laughed too, maybe a little too hard, because I thought it was absolutely hilarious that everyone was staring at my shay and had no idea. I distinctly remember one of the kids saying, "Well, obviously it wasn't one of us. How would that even come out of a kid?" Eventually, they all decided the culprit had to be the birthday girl's stepdad. I will never not laugh at the fact that they thought a 12-year-old girl's shay belonged to a middle-aged man, because it was that nasty. The birthday girl ended up becoming a major bully in high school, so I felt even more satisfied every time I walked past her, knowing that once upon a time, she and her family had to clean up my mess. Story 6. The first and only time I stole something in my life was when I was 8 years old. My neighbor was having a yard sale to raise money to take his kids to Disneyland. He had a backyard baseball DS game, and I had the $5 to buy it. I really wanted it. I walked up with my money, but he told me he was going to give the game to the landlord's kid, who was my age. I was so mad and annoyed that he was getting it for free. A few hours later, I went back outside and saw that the game was still sitting there, and my neighbor wasn't around. So I took it. I also grabbed a bag of golf balls that was marked $10 and a few more games labeled $1 each, thinking it would make it less obvious that it was me. Then I ran back to my apartment, but the guilt started eating me up. About 30 minutes later, my neighbor knocked on the door and asked if I had taken the game since he knew I had wanted one. I lied and told him no, that I had been inside the whole time. I never played any of those games. I felt so damn bad I couldn't even put one in my DS. I wanted to take them back, but I knew I'd get caught. They did end up going on the trip, and the landlord's kid was mad that he didn't get his game. I didn't like him, so I was fine with that. Still, I remember every price and every detail of that yard sale, and I still feel guilty. Story 7. I moved back into my parents' house after I got fired at 24. I had been there about a month, and every single day, my dad would find a reason to get mad at me. It would always escalate to him threatening to fight me. About a month in, I snapped. I hit him in the mouth with a right hand and followed it up with a left hook. That was it. I felt guilty immediately. He was bleeding everywhere and quickly played the victim. I even tried to get him a paper towel, but he just looked at it, then spit blood at me. It got all over the walls. I'm really scared for my mom. He's choked her to the point of passing out before, beaten the crap out of her multiple times when I was a kid, and even spent 15 months in state jail for it. He's a master manipulator, and my mom keeps trying to make excuses for him, blaming his new medication. I'm not buying it. He's been an extremely violent narcissist my whole life. When I got kicked out, I told him he'd never see or talk to me again. I meant it. I'm done. Story 8. I have schizophrenia. An uncle I've never met has it too, so I guess it's hereditary. My doctors don't know, and I'll never tell them because I'm afraid of being treated like a schizophrenic. I attempted suicide at 15, and in the hospital, they made me fill out a bunch of questionnaires. One of them was a schizophrenia inventory. I had heard of schizophrenia, but I didn't really know what it was. I was surprised to see that the symptoms they described weren't normal, and that I was answering yes to almost every question. But they ended up diagnosing me with major depressive disorder and never asked me about the schizophrenia symptoms. For years, I thought maybe that meant the schizophrenia questions weren't a cause for concern. Like maybe those things could happen with really severe depression. But now I realize they probably just never even looked at it. I have 2 master's degrees. I know what's real and what's not, so I do my best to ignore the hallucinations. I always thought that the way I hear voices in my head was how everyone's brain worked. I assumed it was normal to have an inner monologue in different voices that didn't belong to me. But I've learned that it's not. It's not normal to hear other voices butting in. I really thought that was just how thinking worked. Story 9. A year ago, my partner of 8 years left me out of the blue, 2 months before our wedding. People tell me how strong I am, how well I'm doing. They compliment my work ethic. I work 60-plus hours a week between 2 jobs and say my coping skills are admirable. When people ask, I'm firm in saying that I'm better off without him, that I'm happy. Truth is, I think about him every minute of every day. I work so much just to avoid being alone in our house. I still love him. I cry myself to sleep at least 2x a week. I think about Suis a lot, and honestly, I don't think I'll ever love anyone the way I loved him. He was truly my best friend. We got a dog a few months before he left. I don't know where I'd be if she hadn't come into my life. Sorry for the downer post, but it felt cathartic to put into words. Story 10. I thought I was dying the other day. It might have been a heart attack. I had been neglecting my house. My dishes were beyond disgusting. Clutter was everywhere. Not trying to throw a pity party, but my fiance broke up with me recently, and I went through a painful physical situation. I was just a lazy, depressed sack of shit. As I sat there considering calling an ambulance, it hit me. If I died, someone would have to clean this up. They'd associate my death with this filth. Obviously, if I died, someone would have to deal with my stuff. But leaving behind dirty dishes and a trashed house? That felt rude. I live alone in the country. It would probably take days before anyone even noticed. So, I cleaned. I started with the dishes, scrubbing like my life depended on it. At one point, I could feel my heart struggling, like it was fighting to keep going. It's hard to describe, but I knew something was wrong, so I scrubbed faster, racing against the clock. Finish the dishes before you die, you idiot. I figured if someone found me dead on the kitchen floor, with broken plates around me and gloves on my hands, At least they'd know I was trying to make it better. I finally finished, but my heart still hurt. I was having trouble breathing. I was really scared. I wrote down who should get what, the gun safe code, some goodbye messages. I wrote that I knew I was dying. I put my cat outside so she wouldn't get trapped inside and have to eat my body to survive. Then I laid down on the kitchen floor so my corpse wouldn't ruin the carpet. And I waited. Eventually, I fell asleep, exhausted. I'm going to get my heart checked soon. I'm only 38, never smoked. But who knows? Esh happens. But what I did was stupid. I'm a loved member of my community. I didn't call 911. I just accepted that I might die. And my biggest concern was making sure my house wasn't messy. That's fed up. And I'm still trying to figure out why I didn't try to get medical help. Story 11. I anonymously reported my childhood best friend to CPS. She was in a horribly abusive relationship, and her daughter was suffering because of it. My friend was forced to live in a house with a hoarder and wasn't allowed to clean anything. We're talking about a place so bad you couldn't even open the front door, with rotting food everywhere. The worst moment was when her boyfriend, in a drunken rage, shoved her while she was holding their baby. The poor little girl was only a month old. She was lucky. My friend took the brunt of the fall, ending up with a concussion and needing 7 staples in the back of her head. Then there was the time he locked my friend out of the house while their 2-month-old daughter screamed inside for hours. He taunted her from the other side of the door, saying he'd never let her see their daughter again, while completely ignoring the baby crying. My friend pounded on the front door so hard her hands were raw. She finally got inside by climbing a drain pipe to a 2nd-story window. She left him for 2 weeks after that, but it didn't stick. After everything, she still refused to leave for good. She convinced herself that he loved her. So I called CPS. When they showed up, they told her she had to leave him, or she would lose her daughter. That was the push she needed. She left and never went back. That was 4 years ago. Today, my friend and her daughter are doing great. Her ex is serving a 10-year prison sentence for beating and hospitalizing the girlfriend who came after her. I would do it all over again in a heartbeat to save that little girl. She's the sweetest kid and deserves to grow up in a safe home. Story 12. I'm pretty sure my dad killed my mom. The official version is that she committed suicide and my dad found her body. She definitely wanted to die, but I think he helped her and never told anyone. I found my mother's living will and medical records, updated shortly before her death, signed by both her and my father. I also found out that they had previously discussed euthanasia. It's illegal in Germany, but they could have traveled to a neighboring country for it. The issue was that euthanasia there required the entire family to be involved. Not just my father, but my siblings and me as well. My mother didn't want that. She couldn't bear the thought of talking to us about it, let alone having us be part of it. It's been 3.5 years since she died, and I've never spoken to my dad about it. I knew admitting it would be painful for him. He's incredibly uncomfortable talking about anything emotional. But it broke my heart to think that he might spend the rest of his life feeling guilty for doing this behind our backs. One day I told him that I wish she hadn't had to do this alone, that I wish someone had been there with her, maybe even helped her. He didn't answer, but he hugged me and let out the deepest sigh of relief I've ever heard. He seemed lighter. I hope he actually feels that way too. I'll never tell my siblings. There's no point in making them suffer more or turning them against my father. That was hard to write, but also kind of liberating. Thanks to anyone who read this. Have a good day. Story 13. When I had just given birth, my son was a newborn, and I had just discovered my ex was sleeping with another woman. I wanted to kill myself. I was drowning in postpartum depression, anxiety, and heartbreak. My ex moved into his new girlfriend's house, took what he could from ours, and left me alone with our baby. I bottled it all up, terrified that my son would be affected by my sadness. I was so deeply worried that he would be damaged by seeing me cry. So every night, as soon as I got him to sleep, I would turn on the baby monitor, take it with me to the bathroom, and cry in the shower. It became my nightly routine, months of silently breaking down where he wouldn't see. During the darkest times, I planned my own death. I thought about walking to the icy river and ending it. I spent months figuring out how to make sure my baby was safe first. On our daily walks, I stalked my spot, running through scenarios in my mind, but some instinct in me kept telling me to keep going. Keep kissing your baby. Keep smelling his hair. Keep telling him you love him. I felt like I had to express my love to him as much as possible. And slowly, that's what kept me going. Love. The life I had created. my son. The thoughts finally stopped when he was 9 months old. I never looked back. Happy ending. I got a good therapist. I moved. I recently won full custody of my son. The dark days are rare now, and I no longer feel scared or alone. Story 14. I have a few secrets I'll take to the grave, but this one is lighthearted. I was given the honor of babysitting my nephew and my not-yet-walking niece. It was a big day for their parents. They were finally getting time outside the house without kids for the first time in years. Everything was going fine. My niece was crawling and pulling herself up as usual, nowhere near walking, or so we thought. But nope, that day while I was watching her, she took her first steps. I was completely shocked and so excited. I almost grabbed my phone to call her mom, but then I stopped myself. No way am I telling them they missed their baby's first steps, so I kept quiet. Later that night, after her parents came home, she did it again in front of them. They were thrilled. They thought they were witnessing it for the first time, and they'll never know. That one's coming with me to the grave. Story 15. My first boyfriend was an asshole. He introduced me to his version of BDMS way too early. I came from an emotionally abusive home, growing up taking care of my narcissistic grandmother, so I didn't recognize the red flags. I was completely under his spell. By the end, he had me working in a brothel because he got horny from the thought of sharing me. He made me hand over everything I earned. One day while I was working, I met someone who saw what was happening. My boyfriend tried to force me to cut that person out of my life, but I had spent my whole childhood sneaking around my controlling grandmother. I wasn't about to stop now. That person recognized my boyfriend was abusing and using me, but I couldn't see it. I was too in love, too used to being treated like trash. One weekend, my friend kidnapped me for a getaway. We spent the entire weekend together, talking, laughing, just existing without control or manipulation. He showed me I deserved better. He gave me the strength to leave. Since then, I haven't had much luck with men. I got married and divorced. My last ex left me when I told him I was pregnant. I never told anyone what my first boyfriend made me do. For years, I felt dirty and ashamed. But I've finally made peace with that part of me. And now I can even write about it. Story 16. I had a cat that got very sick. The vet told me it was some kind of virus that animals can get from eating the feces of other animals. I was supposed to give him a pill once a day, but it was nearly impossible to get him to swallow it. I wrestled with him, tried every trick. But it always ended the same way, him pissing on me and spitting the pill back out. Eventually, he started hiding from me all the time. It was heartbreaking. He was sick, getting worse, and I couldn't even pet him or sit near him because he was scared of me now. One day, I came home and found him in a corner, motionless, his eyes open, breathing rapidly. I called his name and touched him, but he didn't react. When I picked him up and turned his face toward me, his eyes didn't move, didn't focus. He wasn't there anymore. I thought he must have been in shock or in unbearable pain. So I carried him to the bathroom, wrapped him up completely in a towel, and held him there until he stopped breathing. He didn't struggle. It only took a minute, and then he was gone. I still believe I did the right thing for him, but I never told anyone. Story 17. When I was 11, I went on a week-long school trip to a 1940s Army barracks that had been converted into a sports center. We were staying in green barracks-style rooms with bunk beds, 6 kids per room, about 100 kids in total. My room was at the very opposite end of the building from the toilets, at the end of a long, straight 150-meter corridor. Every 25 meters or so, there were doors with safety glass panels, and bedrooms lined both sides of the hallway. One night, around 2 a.m., I had to pee. I got off my bunk, cracked the door open, and peeked out. The hallway was pitch black. Everyone was asleep, even the teachers. The only light came from the dim green fire exit signs, the red blinking smoke detectors, and the faint glow from the bathroom at the very end of the corridor. I knew I'd never make it all the way there. The ghosts, the monsters, the Nazi ghosts, they were definitely lurking. I managed to creep through one of the safety doors after checking the glass panel for any lurking spirits. But now I was trapped between two sections of the corridor. I was stuck. I couldn't make it to the bathroom or go back to my room. I was a sitting duck. They could be anywhere, but I really had to pee. With the bathroom ruled out, I made an executive decision. I'd pee in the hallway, but not just in one spot. That would create a puddle. No, I had to strategically distribute it. So I walked along the wall, peeing in a zigzag motion, aiming both up and down, That way it would stay on the walls and not pool on the carpet. My nerves made me move faster than I should have, and by the time I reached the end, I was still peeing. So I turned around and walked back, continuing my wiggle pee technique on the other wall. Sweet relief. Then I bolted back to my room before the ghost could get me. The next morning, in the corridor section next to mine, I saw piss everywhere, dripping down the walls onto the carpet. Worse, I saw the headmaster and other teachers inspecting it. That's where they were sleeping. It was never officially mentioned, but I heard them talking. It was way too high up for a kid to have done it. There were other schools there, teenagers. It had to be one of them, right? Never underestimate the feats an 11-year-old can accomplish when faced with the threat of ghosts. Story 18. I was at a house party back in late 1998 at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. I had already been drinking way too much gin with my friends, and earlier, I had grabbed some pizza from a Munchies truck. By the time I arrived at the party, I was completely wrecked. At some point, I stumbled into the bathroom and violently threw up. Pizza and liquor everywhere. Sink, mirror, probably the ceiling. Absolute carnage. Panic set in. I had to get out of there. But how? I actually considered climbing out the window, but either it was too small or there wasn't one. I tried to clean it up, but only made it worse. People were knocking on the door, impatiently waiting their turn. I was trapped. So, I made a decision. I threw open the door and ran out of the bathroom, sprinting straight out of the house. As I was leaving, I heard a guy and a girl yell, "What the F?" I was mortified by my behavior that night, and I have never had a drop of gin since. If you were living in Logan Park Apartments near Sahayuk in late 1998 and had to clean that mess up, it was me, and I'm sorry. Story 19. A long time ago, I went on a date with my then-girlfriend, now ex, to a hibachi-style restaurant. I tried all sorts of food I normally wouldn't eat, had a decent time, and took the bus home. The second I stepped onto the bus, I knew I was in trouble. My gut was churning. It sounded like the storming of Normandy had been localized entirely in my intestines. The bus ride was about an hour, and somehow I made it within 10 minutes of my home. But that was it. I was out of time. I jumped off at the nearest stop, ran across the street in the dead of night, and found the closest alley. Behind a conveniently angled dumpster, I let it all out. What came out of me could have been classified as a war crime. If international observers had been present, I'd be on trial in The Hague. I called a nearby friend, begging them to find me in the alley and bring a roll of toilet paper. I stood there near the scene of my Lovecraftian horror, fighting the urge to vomit until they arrived. I used the TP greedily, then left it all behind and fled home to take the longest shower of my life. The next day, I stealthily returned to the alley. The business owner had obviously seen the devastation. He had simply pushed the dumpster to cover it. I don't know how long it stayed there, but however long it was too long. Story 20. Back in college, my girlfriend, now wife, and I got pretty frisky one night. Things escalated and we started experimenting with food, specifically fruits and vegetables. Long story short, a cucumber in a condom went on quite the adventure, but somehow it ended up back on the counter, sans condom. A few hours later, her roommate, her best friend, and her best friend's boyfriend, who also happened to be my best friend, now married, came home. We didn't think much of it. Then, to our absolute horror, they stole the cucumber and made a salad with it. Both of them complained about a weird smell and texture, probably lube, but they still ate half of it. At some point, we walked out and saw what was left of the cucumber. One of us died inside while the other started laughing hysterically. I was dragged outside and sworn to secrecy. But every single time my friend throws even a little bit of shade my way, I desperately want to say, "Yeah? Well, you ate my wife's ass cucumber." But they are not the kind of people who would find that funny. In fact, even years later, I'm positive it would not go over well. So, within our circle, we will never speak of it again, but I had to share it somewhere. Story 21. In my last year of high school, there was this kid who absolutely hated me. He was a football player, the type who drove a truck and wore camo everything for some reason. One day, as I was walking home, he and a buddy pulled up and obliterated me with a paintball gun. It hurt so bad, man. A few days later, I got my hands on a baseball bat and ambushed him in the parking lot. I hit him hard in the back and kept going while he was face down. I smashed his hands pretty bad, then ran off into the woods, shitting my pants with fear. Somehow, I never got caught. I kept my mouth shut, and nobody else said much either. Things kind of blew over. Years later, I found out I did some permanent damage, bad enough that he couldn't play football anymore, which messed up his college plans. I regret doing it, honestly. Story 22. When I was about 8, I had to grab something from my parents' room. My dad's old Nokia pinged with a message from a family friend, someone who was mostly my mom's friend. I knew the couple had recently gone through a divorce because my childhood friend, their kid, had suffered a lot. My dad wasn't abusive, but he was difficult to deal with. Moody, secretive, always lying about our financial situation. The message was from my mom's best friend, asking my dad for S. Another message followed, saying, "Your family will never know about it." Even as a kid, I was disgusted. I already disliked my dad for his lies, and I definitely didn't want him cheating on my mom, too. I checked for other messages but didn't find any, so I deleted hers and erased her number. Then I grabbed what my parents had asked me for. After stopping by my room to grab my Game Boy so they wouldn't question why I took so long, I don't know if my dad ever cheated after that. And now I'm too afraid to ask, because it would mean admitting I went through his phone. The contact with that family ended after their divorce, and my mom's friend passed away about 5 years ago. I never told anyone until now, but sometimes it burns in my throat, like I need to blurt it out. Story 23. When I came back from my third deployment to Iraq in 2007, I wasn't me anymore. Even now, I'm barely me. I felt completely alone, even though I had a wife, kids, and family back home who cared about me. But I was numb. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to be with anyone. I needed to feel something. So I started going to massage parlors, Backpage, meeting random women off Craigslist. It didn't work. So I tried something else. Every Friday, I did something reckless to try to feel again. That didn't work either. So I bought a $1,400 bulldog, re-rip, Semper. Then I bought a nice truck I couldn't afford. I kept spending, trying to fill the hole, but the emptiness never went away. 15 years later, I still barely feel anything. My kids help, but I feel like I've messed them up too much to really connect with them. Sometimes I think about getting in my car and just driving away, but I know that would hurt my family financially. Other times I think about how if I hadn't made it back, they would have at least had my life insurance money. Maybe they would have had a better life. I just hope that someday I can feel somewhat normal again. Story 24. When I was 12, my grandparents gifted my parents a brand new TV with a built-in VCR for Christmas. These things were expensive at the time. After winter break, I got home early one day, found one of my dad's porn tapes, and decided to watch it. When I went to eject it, it wouldn't come out. No matter what I did, it was stuck. I panicked. I even tried prying it out with a screwdriver before realizing I was leaving marks on the VCR. I had no idea what to do, so I just left it in there, put the empty VHS sleeve back where I found it, and went on with my life. Days passed and no one noticed, but I agonized over it every second. Then one day while I was playing Super Nintendo, I heard my 9-year-old sister ask my mom if she could watch a movie on the new TV. My mom said, "Oh yeah, let's try it out." I froze. My sister yelled, "There's a tape stuck in here." My mom yelled back, "What? We haven't even used it. 1 second." As my mom walked into the room, my sister pressed play. Some dude getting his banana sucked filled the screen. "Mom, what movie is this?" Chaos. My mom scrambled to turn it off. She tried ejecting the tape. Nothing. She told my sister to go watch a movie on the regular TV and called my dad at work. "I don't know. I didn't put it in there." Dad got home, tried to get the tape out, no luck, took it to a repair shop, where they finally got it out, but said the VCR was broken. When my grandparents came over and asked how they liked their Christmas gift, my mom smiled and said, "We love it. It's so convenient. Thank you so much." Later, I overheard my mom talking to a friend. She said, "Dad must have watched it one night and forgotten about it. I just hope my parents never find out." My dad definitely figured it out and took the blame for me. That was over 20 years ago. We've never spoken about it since. Story 25. My father will never know that I intercepted his hospital bill after his truck crash, so he wouldn't spend the rest of his life drowning in debt. Instead, I took out a small, manageable loan to cover it. I had already saved up a good amount over time, so it didn't destroy me financially. He had retired after the water he was hauling shifted over an embankment. Workers' comp and unemployment screwed him over, and he couldn't work. The only way to pay off that bill would have been to get a hard job. But he was 65 years old with horrible joint and back problems. He wasn't in any shape for hard labor. 2 years later, I'm still paying off the loan, but at least my dad isn't grinding himself into the ground. He's no longer driving trucks. Instead, he spends most of his time at home, watching TV and working as a part-time mall cop at a dead mall, just to get a little exercise. And that's enough for me. Story 26. I did some really fed-up things when I was younger. The kind of things that could have landed me in jail, and it's the reason my first love and I separated. I was a shitty person back then, and because of what I did to her, she left. She couldn't take it anymore. It completely shattered my perception of who I was and forced me to genuinely reflect on how terrible I had been. I took the time to work on myself and I changed. Now I'm with someone new and she's amazing. My ex and I are on relatively good terms these days, though we don't speak often. That's a story for another time. I guess my secret is that I used to be a completely different person. I see so many posts on social media about how people don't change, but I did. I still struggle sometimes, still get those old urges and impulses, like a shadow of who I used to be. Old habits die hard, I suppose. But these days I can control them. I can stop myself from acting on them. Still, I'm terrified that one day I'll lose all the progress I've made. I'm no saint, and I don't think I'll ever be a truly good person because of my past. But I'm trying. I'm desperately trying to be better. I hate that I only change after my ex left me instead of before. I hate the things I did to her. And I hate even more that those impulses are still buried somewhere inside me. I've been to therapy, I've been on medication, and they've genuinely helped. So if you ever find yourself in a place like I was, get help. It's not easy. It takes a long time, but it's worth it. Story 27. I spent my 20s climbing mountains. Alpine mountaineering, rock climbing, sport, trad alpine, even waterfall ice. I got pretty good at it. I even climbed the biggest mountain in the Canadian Rockies, and I hated it. I don't like climbing. I never have. I wasn't reckless most of the time, but I still had three very close calls. One of my best friends died on a mountain. Growing up, my dad was convinced I was weak, helpless, and stupid. No matter what I did, he always believed I couldn't handle anything. He was terrified of losing me and thought he was protecting me every time he stopped me from accomplishing something. You can't do that. You don't know what you're doing. You'll die. And when he couldn't stop me, I'm surprised you're still alive. I've never told him or anyone that I spent a decade doing something I despise just to prove him wrong, that his attempts to keep me safe nearly got me killed. And I don't think I ever will. Story 28. I currently have a huge OCD thing going on. It's not officially diagnosed, just something I've recognized through personal research. I can't do anything without repeating it a certain number of times, usually twice if I'm lucky, but most of the time, it's four or five. As a kid, it was minor, just touching things a certain way or blinking a set number of times, but now I can see that I've devolved. At first, it was making little mental bets with myself, and if I didn't follow through, I had a bit of time to make up for it. But as of a couple of days ago, I realized that if I don't do things just right, I start shaking or slightly freaking out. I think I could have pulled myself out of this before, but now it feels like it's too late. It's starting to become obvious, and people are noticing the weird things I do. Worse, it's affecting my job. I work in fast food, and I've started wasting product because of these compulsions. I'm 18 and about to go to college. I don't know what's going to happen. Story 29. My friend and I used to hang out with this guy I worked with. He was all right at work, but outside of it, I started seeing another side of him. For clarity, my friend and I are gay, and the work friend is bi. Both my friend and I went through breakups around the same time, and he was devastated, so we went out drinking. It was a pretty normal night until the work friend came up with a game. He pulled up a list of kinks, and we had to take a shot for everything we'd either done or would be up for. We were drinking at my place because it was cheaper. Just watching movies and eating. As the night went on, my friend got really drunk and emotional. He excused himself to go to the bathroom, and I suggested we call him a taxi and get him home to sleep it off. But the work friend was persistent about getting him to drink more. He kept pouring alcohol for him and even suggested that they should both stay at my place and leave in the morning. I told him no. My friend was either going to throw up or get even more upset, and it wasn't a good idea. But he kept pushing, getting agitated when I insisted my friend should go home. Something about it didn't sit right with me. I told him he was welcome to stay if he wanted, but my friend was leaving. I called a taxi and sent him home. The work friend sulked for the rest of the night and left early the next morning. After that, I stopped inviting him out with us and kept my distance. I didn't like how he was forcing alcohol on my friend. It just didn't feel right. Maybe it was just toxic lad behavior, but it was the persistence that unsettled me. He had been pushy with drinks before, but never like that. My friend kind of knows the gist of it, but I never told him everything, just that the work friend was trying to get him to drink more. It's been a few years now, and whenever my friend brings him up and suggests meeting up, I always come up with an excuse. I don't work with him anymore. I don't really talk to him either, and I don't think I ever will. Story 30. I had an undiagnosed mental illness for more than half of my life. I was finally diagnosed last year and started medication soon after. For the first time in over 15 years, I don't want to die anymore. It's not that I was depressed or actively suicidal. I just couldn't see the point of continuing. Everyone else seemed to be able to do things that I couldn't, no matter how hard I tried. It made me feel worthless, desperate, and terrified for the future. How was I supposed to survive 50 years of adulthood when I struggled just to feed and bathe myself? How was I supposed to get and keep a job when I couldn't work for more than 2 hours without crying? Not being alive seemed so much easier. And then I just became numb. When everything is an effort, nothing is fun anymore. Nobody knew. My family never noticed, even though my struggle started in my early teens. My husband was just annoyed that my degree took me so long and that I was so lazy. My friends stopped reaching out after I kept declining invitations, assuming no one really enjoyed my company anyway. Most of them met me in my 20s, when my mental illness had already become so ingrained in me that they just assumed that's who I was. Some days when I don't take my medication, I'm advised not to take it continuously. It all comes rushing back. I lie there, trying to keep myself from crying or lashing out, thinking about how to kill myself in a way that wouldn't traumatize the few people who still care about me. Today is one of those days. Nobody knows how bad it really was. Nobody knows how bad it still gets sometimes. Story 31. During COVID, when everything was shut down, my old cat was very sick, near death from old age. No veterinarians in my area were open, and none were even returning voicemails. There was one vet who finally answered and had to walk me through putting her down myself. I got written up at work for taking a day to grieve. I couldn't function. Every 20 minutes, something would remind me of her silly resting bitch face or the little meow she used to do. I'm crying right now just thinking about it. Driving a truck for 8 hours a day on the highway was my job, and I knew I wasn't in the right state of mind to do it safely. But apparently my employer thought otherwise. I'm a 40-year-old guy. Judge me if you want. But if there's a heaven, I know that cat is waiting at the gates, judging me with that same look, wondering what the hell took me so long. Story 32. It's been almost 30 years, and I still think about this. When I was in high school, my brother and I had a shortcut we took every day, a narrow path through a wooded area that led directly behind the school football practice field. It saved us a good chunk of time, and we had been using it for years. Then out of nowhere, the school put up a fence that blocked the path. Suddenly, what used to be a quick walk turned into a 20-minute detour, and it pissed us off. Our dad had some wire cutters, so we decided to solve the problem ourselves. We snipped a hole in the fence, just big enough to crawl through, and kept using the path like nothing had changed. A few weeks later, a kid I knew went missing. He was gone for days before they found his body, hidden in the same wooded area. He had been murdered by another student. The whole thing freaked us out, but what haunts me to this day is what I saw in the news. When they covered the story, one of the shots they showed was our hole in the fence. I think about it more than I'd like to admit. Sometimes, late at night, it pops into my head, and I spiral down a rabbit hole of what-ifs. What if we had just walked around? What if we had never cut that hole? Would that kid still be alive? Story 33. I have no plan for my future whatsoever. The college course I'm in right now, I'm not even sure it'll make me happy. But my parents, my uncles, my aunts, my grandmother, they all have this unspoken expectation that I'll pursue medicine, as if my own ambitions don't matter. What I really want is to pursue filmmaking. I know it's going to be a hard road, but at least it would be my road. At least I wouldn't have to fake enthusiasm every time someone asked me, "So what are you going to do after you graduate?" Instead, I just keep repeating the same line. I'm studying psychology, and that's what I'll be pursuing after college. It's easier than arguing. But the truth is, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't even really want to be a psychologist. The only reason I chose psychology was that I saw an opportunity to connect it to something I do love, films. Understanding people, emotions, stories, that's what interests me. But even that doesn't feel like enough. What frustrates me the most is that no matter how many times I explain this, they don't take it seriously. They just keep pushing. And every time they do, it chips away at whatever faith I have in the choices I have made. At this point, I'd rather struggle doing something I'm 100% passionate about, even if they don't take it seriously, than waste my life doing something I don't love and they still don't respect. Story 34. I've been in love with my best friend from the moment I met her. We've known each other for about 15 years, and every time she comes back into my life, I fall for her all over again. She's always drifted in and out, and every time she's around, it feels like I'm right back where I started. Over the years, I've even ended relationships, hoping that maybe this time I'd finally get my chance with her. But I never got the courage to ask. I figured I'd rather have her as a friend than risk losing her completely. Now, I've been in a relationship for 7 years. We're not married, but we probably will be one day. My girlfriend and I are great for each other. We work. We fit. But a few months ago, this girl came back into my life, and we picked up our friendship like no time had passed. We talk constantly. I see her multiple times a week. When she's not around, I think about her. She's the one person who has consistently made me feel something in a way that no one else ever has. She makes jokes at the bar that I'm probably her soulmate, and I can't help but think that maybe she's right. If I were single, I wouldn't hesitate. I'd take my shot, but I'm not, and leaving a perfectly good relationship for a chance at something else seems insane. So, I'll probably take this to my grave and spend my life regretting not trying. Some weird part of me even hopes I get diagnosed with a terminal disease, just so I can finally say F it and tell her how I feel before I die. Story 35. I had a friend in the military who caught COVID a few months after it started tearing through the U.S. We met through mutual friends and we clicked right away. He was a good guy, 28 years old, married, with a 2-year-old daughter and another kid on the way. He got really sick and had to go to the hospital. Before they intubated him, he told me something that still haunts me. He said that if he didn't make it, I needed to go to his house, find a small safe in his closet, and destroy what was inside. He said there were videos in there of some really bad SH that he and his buddies did in Afghanistan. He didn't make it. At his funeral, he got full military honors. People spoke about what an amazing person he was, how he was a hero, how much he was loved. And I just sat there, unable to say anything. I never told anyone about what he said. I never checked the safe. I didn't want to know, but I still think about it all the time. When someone dies, especially when it's tragic, people only ever talk about the good. They say the same things. They were happy. They could light up a room. They were smart, funny, kind. And now every time I hear that, all I can think is, were they actually a piece of she? Story 36. When I was about 15, I had to go to my mom's office after school to wait for her to finish work. They had a snack cabinet, just a simple setup with a basket holding cash and a selection of cookies, chips, and other snacks. People would leave money in the basket or write IOU notes if they were short. My mom would give me money to buy a snack, but my teenage brain came up with a brilliant idea. If people were writing IOUs, then surely no one would notice if a few extra bucks went missing, right? So, I started taking any bills larger than a dollar here and there, just a few bucks a week. Then one day I walked in and the entire cabinet was gone. I casually asked my mom what happened and she told me someone had been stealing from it. My immediate response? Really? Why would adults steal from that? Now let's be clear. This was an office where people were making good money, six figures in a mid-sized town. I was the only kid coming in regularly. No one ever confronted me about it. I don't know if they suspected me or not, but that was the end of the office snack cabinet. That was nearly 15 years ago, and I still feel bad about it sometimes. But I can't bring myself to say anything. Mom, if you ever somehow read this, I'm sorry, I ruined your office's snack cabinet. Story 37. Something people may notice about me is that I have very few social media accounts. Some have told me I should live a little more, and others say it might even be beneficial for my work. But no, I have a very good reason to stay away from it all, and to keep the few accounts I do have as anonymous as humanly possible, including this Reddit account. When I was a kid, I was diagnosed with Asperger's. I didn't function well in a normal school, so I was placed in a specialist autism school. At first, it was great. I finally started taking an interest in subjects, made some good friends, and felt like I belonged somewhere. But as I got older, I matured into a functioning, intelligent, self-sufficient member of society, while most of the others did not. I need to emphasize that I am an exceptional case. If you met me, you would never think of me as autistic. I've adapted to the everyday world in a way that most of my old classmates never did. Now I'm studying for a PhD at one of the highest-ranking universities in the country. Meanwhile, the majority of the people I knew from school can barely order a pizza without help. That's the nature of the spectrum. Everyone develops differently. I transferred back to a normal school when I was 14, and since then, multiple people from my old school have relentlessly tried to track me down. These are people who regularly behave inappropriately in public, have extremely bizarre childlike obsessions, and constantly pester others for whatever they want. And for some reason, they became obsessed with me, like a dog chasing a squirrel. Just to give you an idea of what I mean, one of them somehow found my home address. I have no idea how. He sent me gifts in the mail, including a manuscript for a children's book he had written, which contained graphic descriptions of how babies are made. He wanted me to read it and give him feedback. I threw that shushy straight into the fire. Nowadays, I can study, go to work, meet my friends and family, and just live my life without the constant burden of my old friends. It baffles people that I have almost no presence on major social media platforms, but I just can't handle the anxiety. I deleted Snapchat after less than 2 weeks because I had already been identified. If I see a familiar name on Facebook, I block them instantly, no matter how I used to feel about them. Yes, my lack of networking means I've missed out on big events, news, and social circles. But I'd rather deal with that than have people associate me with them. Story 38. When I was 17, my friend Amanda and I were sleeping over at another friend's house. In the middle of the night, her mom busted through the door, furious, demanding to know who had been smoking marijuana. Her daughter, without hesitation, blamed Amanda. Now the truth, the only person in that room who actually smoked was her daughter. But Amanda came from a really messed up household. I knew she already had enough people in her life blaming her for things she didn't do. I didn't want her to feel like this was just another person throwing her under the bus. So I took the blame. Years later, I'm pretty sure that family still thinks I'm a drug addict. Meanwhile, their daughter married a man 20 years older than her and now spends her time trying to convert me to her religion. Amanda, she's happily married now, has a dog she's always wanted, and, most importantly, has a real family that's a million times better than the one she grew up with. She visits me sometimes, and I'm genuinely happy for her. She made it out. Story 39. For the last few years, I've had a well-paying job. My family runs a small trucking company in the Midwest. I started driving as soon as I legally could at 21, and for the past 6 years, I've made anywhere between $45,000 and $60,000 a year, and I have almost nothing to show for it. I still live with family. I have $30,000 in debt between my pickup and student loans. The only things I own are my truck, a motorcycle, and a few firearms. My family constantly argues with me about money, calling me dumb and irresponsible. But what they don't know, I've donated more money than I can count. I've lent thousands to friends who needed it, given to charities, helped people broken down on the side of the road, tipped waiters and waitresses 60% to 100% on almost every meal out. If I see a way to help someone, I do it. Growing up, we were poor, and nobody helped us. That feeling stuck with me. So I made it my life's mission to help others at literally any moment. And keeping it a secret, that just makes it burn brighter inside me. The only time I'll ever say anything is maybe in my will. Until then, they'll never know. Story 40. A little over a decade ago, my friend gave me his collection of Yu-Gi-Oh cards. It was huge, at least 300 cards. I was in first grade at the time, and the stack was probably as tall as my knee from the ground. Then a new kid moved into our apartment complex. He was younger, maybe preschool or kindergarten, but he was sweet and fun to be around. My friends quickly adored him. And then my friend, the same one who gave me all those cards, decided to take them back and give them to the new kid instead. I was pissed. For weeks, I stewed over it. Eventually, that same friend and I were playing with toy cars, and he wouldn't shut up about his new Hot Wheels car. At some point, he had to run home for a bit, leaving all the cars out. I grabbed his precious new car and chucked it behind the thorny bush by my apartment. Then I packed up my own stuff and went inside like nothing happened. When he came back, I even helped him clean up, and thankfully, there wasn't much fuss about the missing car. I moved away a few months later anyway. Story 41. In sixth grade, where I absolutely should have known better, I accidentally pooped my pants. And the class special needs girl, Megan Manzanars, took the blame for it. She got removed from our class for the rest of the year. Full story. My parents were extremely strict, so getting my hands on explicit music was damn near impossible in a world with zero social media, no cell phones, and painfully limited dial-up internet. Determined, I stole $30 in quarters, adjusted for 1999 inflation, baby, and arranged to buy a Slipknot CD from my friend's much cooler, much older middle schooler brother. That entire afternoon, I desperately needed to use the bathroom. But closing this deal was way more important. After the swap, I was so thrilled that these older kids wanted to talk to me about hard metal bands that I just slowly pooped my pants, like bit by bit, until an entire turd landed in my underwear. Finally, I sprinted back to the classroom as lunch was ending and tried to dump the evidence into the toilet. But in my panic, it missed and landed on the toilet seat. Then I heard kids coming in from recess. I had to bail. 10 minutes into silent reading, where we had to read quietly after lunch, this kid, Matt, went to the bathroom. He came back immediately and got the teacher. The teacher inspected the bathroom. Then he picked up the phone, stretched the corded receiver outside the entrance, and had a quiet but very serious conversation. A few minutes later, Ms. Cotis, the special needs teacher, walked in. She took Megan out of class. She never came back. She spent the rest of the semester permanently in the small special needs group. My parents never caught me with the CD. Years later, I saw Slipknot live in an arena before the pandemic. I don't poop my pants anymore. Story 42. A few years ago, I went to a party with my really good friend and her fiancé, who I only kind of knew in passing. After a long night of drinking and partying, I decided to crash on her couch instead of walking home wasted. Her fiancé came home a little later than we did. By then, I was already dozing off on the couch, and my friend was completely knocked out in their bed. That's when he started. He kept trying to make moves on me, hardcore. I told him no, multiple times, but he wouldn't stop coming back out to the living room, finding excuses to hover near me, to test my boundaries. He made me so uncomfortable that, the moment he finally went to bed, I texted my roommate and told them to pick me up ASAP. For days after, I had a panic attack every time I thought about it. I just couldn't bring myself to tell her. My anxiety around confrontation is bad enough on a normal day, but something like this, it completely shut me down. I went back and forth for so long. I even came close to telling her a few times. But every time I asked if she was happy with him, she'd just go on about how in love they were, how perfect everything was. Thankfully, she moved away. They're no longer together. She's married to someone new, someone I hope is much better for her. But I still feel guilty. I know that if I were in her shoes, I would have wanted to know. What her fiancé did to me was unfair and disgusting, and the fact that I never told her makes me feel like a shitty friend. I still think about it sometimes. If we ever meet up again, maybe I'll finally tell her. But honestly, I don't see the point anymore. It's been years. I think I'll just have to take this to my grave. Story 43. When I was 17, I was involved with a much older man who was wrapped up in things that were very illegal. I lived in a dangerous city with a high crime rate, and at the time I was lost, depressed, bipolar, and reckless. I did things I regret to this day. My family was deeply religious, and I rebelled just because I could. Skipping school, substance abuse, running with the wrong people, it was all part of it. I had an almost identical twin sister. We were never close. And as I got older and my mental health spiraled, we drifted even more. One day, my boyfriend's associates decided I knew too much. Another boy, someone my age who was also mixed up in their world, found me and told me to hide. He warned me that I was in serious danger. So I did. My family was used to me disappearing for days at a time, so no one thought much of it. But my sister did. She went looking for me. She went to the places she knew I hung out, talked to the people she knew I associated with, trying to figure out where I was. Then she disappeared. Her body was found 2 months later at the bottom of the canal. She had been brutally murdered and mutilated. The authorities wrote it off as a random attack, just another tragedy, another pretty girl caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, a statistic in a violent city. But I know the truth. They got the wrong girl. I keep this to myself because it doesn't matter. She's still dead. Knowing the truth doesn't bring her back. It doesn't change anything. That said, I don't necessarily keep it a secret, but I do keep it inside me, because it's the least I deserve, a punishment I'll carry for the rest of my life. Story 44. I killed a man in cold blood, and I don't regret it for a minute. 15 years ago, I worked for a government agency, one of the three-letter ones. Our station collaborated with multiple agencies since we were stationed at the Port of Los Angeles. We had been tracking a specific individual for months. Someone suspected of being the point man for everything from drug and weapons trafficking to human trafficking. We spent 4 months gathering airtight, irrefutable proof that he was the guy. Then we got a warrant. We went down to the port, cracked open a shipping container, rusted green, covered in sludge and mold. And what we found inside still haunts me to this day. There were 21 people inside. 14 were still alive. The youngest was a 4-year-old girl in a yellow dress with purple flowers, covered in filth, piss, shh, and God knows what else. She looked up at us with nothing in her eyes. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. She was too far gone for that. I have never emptied my stomach so violently in my life. 3 weeks later, after wrapping up the legal loose ends, we got the green light to take him down. We stormed his house. One of those mini mansions on the water, complete with a white picket fence, looking every bit like a normal suburban home. When we kicked in the door, the bastard was cooking breakfast. I put a bullet in the side of his head from 8 feet away. No one said a damn thing. No reprimand, no investigation, no trouble. Just a few colleagues muttering, "Good shot." Paperwork was filed. The whole thing was swept under the rug. Everyone just moved on, like it never happened. Like I was supposed to just move on too. But I never have. I will never forget the feeling I had when we found that container. The rage. The unshakable conviction that I wanted, needed, to kill the man responsible for putting that little girl in there. It made me question myself for years. Am I a good person? Did I do the right thing? And if so, why was it so easily ignored? Even now, I still struggle with it. But I also know that little girl got a second chance at life that she never would have had otherwise. I left that agency shortly after. That life wasn't for me. Now I have a great career doing something I actually love, cooking. I've been married for almost 5 years. I have a beautiful child of my own, and I know without hesitation that I'd do it again to protect either of them. My wife knows about that operation. She knows what we found, but she doesn't know that I was the one who pulled the trigger. And I don't think I'll ever tell her. I don't think I could handle how she might look at me if she knew. Story 45. The love of my life married someone else, just 6 months after we completely ended an 8-year situationship. For years, I poured my heart out to him, and on the nights he was drunk, he'd do the same. But it never changed anything. He never asked to spend time with me, never called, was completely inconsistent. So in the end, I chose me. Then he moved on, quickly. And now after 5 years, he showed up again, told me he regrets the choice he made, that he was afraid of the connection we shared, that he threw it away because it scared him. What I'll take to the grave but need to get off my chest. While I'm deeply committed to the person I'm married to now, I still think about the road that could have been, more often than I should. And the truth is, I still feel a sense of love toward that chapter of my life. I hate myself for living in the past, and I hate him for being a coward. But on the bright side, I wake up every day grateful that I found a different love, a real love, one that chose me back. Story 46. A former girlfriend of mine was going to be a gestational carrier for her sister and brother-in-law. They had spent over $100,000 trying to have a child. They had suffered multiple heartbreaking miscarriages. They were at the end of their options. This was it for them, their last chance. Part of the process meant going off birth control. She was also taking hormones, which I assume increased her fertility. And of course, part of the deal was abstinence. But we ignored that. We kept having S daily. No protection, no caution, just selfishness. As you can probably guess, she got pregnant. The timeline didn't work for her to pretend the baby was from her sister's egg, or she probably would have gone through with the pregnancy and lied. Instead, we had an abortion, and because the doctor's visits would have made things too obvious, she had to back out of the surrogacy agreement entirely, which meant that this couple, who had already given everything to have a baby, had their last chance taken away from them. They have no idea why. They have no idea that we, in our selfishness and carelessness, destroyed their final opportunity. And even worse, that we actually ended the life of a potential child in the process. If this ever came out, it would tear their entire family apart. I still think about how fed up it all was, and I don't think I'll ever stop.